Technorama episode 739. Technorama is an inside job. With a title like that, I was expecting more James Bond music.
I'm not in charge of the music.
And I'm not in charge of getting arrested either.
Yeah, let's don't do that.
So welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. Otherwise, welcome back. You've returned, and we appreciate it very much. There's a few people hanging out with us on the live stream tonight. We'll get into that more later. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And right over there is the one and only Craig Stepp.
Wait, which ham was it again? Oh, yeah.
He'll get it sooner or later.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
He's going to have to put a cardboard box around him and then cut out the thing on the right, just so he knows where the empty space is.
I need to put like an arrow on the
right. Like on Chuck a is note. Over there.
Yeah.
Point this right. way.
That's right.
I'm with no, stupid. I'm
just, yeah, right.
He's got a post-it note under his monitor that says, I'm with stupid. And he goes, oh, I'll point that way.
Yeah. No, I'm doing all right. Just doing a little homeowner stuff today, you know, had to swap out a toilet, you know, that kind of thing. You know what? Swapping out a toilet, it's not that hard.
No.
The problem is it's awkward to carry.
Yes.
You know, when you,
especially upstairs.
Yeah. It's like old CRT TVs, you know, it's like, it's kind of just big and bulky and it's hard to grab a hold on to it, to carry it out. And then to take off that old wax ring.
I usually end up buying two because I'll destroy one in the process of trying to get it right.
Right.
Well, and they're only like a dollar.
Well, I had to buy a new toilet. So it actually came with one.
Oh, that's nice. Good.
Yeah. So that was fun. And I didn't really have any problem with it. Again, it's just so bulky to like, okay, there's the tank was empty, of course.
Yep.
The problem was there was still water in the bowl. So I happened to see somebody on YouTube. They opened the valve, I guess, and used the plunger and it pushed the water out. I was like, oh, that's genius. So I did that and there was just a little bit left in the bottom, in the bottom of the bowl, and I was able to carry it out. But I was trying to carry it being bent over and
it sloshed.
Did this little shuffle. And no, I really didn't drop any water. That was the amazing part. I was expecting a trail out the front door. But no, did pretty good.
Good job. All right, let's get on with our feedback. We asked you a question last week and got some responses.
Letters. Oh, we got letters.
Oh, we got letters. Yep. Trust us, we got letters.
Hey, by the way, I'm going to apologize to our listeners. I've got allergies. The seasonal allergies are really kicking in today.
Well, you need to go to a different season. This would be a good time to go to Australia because it's not spring there.
Yeah, but I'm also allergic to spiders and kangaroos. Stuff that they have there. Snakes.
Things that bite and poison you.
Yeah, I'm allergic to that too.
Our question of the week last week was, what is something that you think shouldn't exist? And listener Ralph says, mobile games that don't save when you tab out. And then Steve Lennon said, mobile games overall.
Yeah, well, I've played several games in the past that just wouldn't save anything. Not just mobile games, but I tell you what, you know what? I was playing, was it Commando on my Commodore 64?
You're playing without underwear?
No.
You were playing Commando.
Yeah, no, I was playing Commando, the game. And then it wouldn't save. And every time you get killed, you went back to the same spot. And eventually I got mad and I hit my fist on the desk.
Yes.
And where it was screwed in, that cheap wood, a piece came flying off. I was like, okay, maybe this game ain't for me.
Maybe. Maybe after the 15th time, you know, fool me 14 times, shame on you.
Oh man,
fool me 15 or more, shame on me.
Piece of wood came flying out. I was like, okay, I'm
Weber Baker's thing that shouldn't exist is kale.
Come on, I like kale.
Lone Guy's Night is on a similar track. He said cilantro.
Yeah,
it's good if you don't overuse it.
Oh no, you can't overuse it. Yeah, but it's fine.
You can't have pico without cilantro.
Yeah. Stephen London says, I think that everything exists for a reason, even if some things make no rhyme or reason. But these three, ticks, Putin, well, goes without saying, and meetings without an agenda.
Oh, amen, brother. Thing. Hey, that gets a desk bell and a Mario coin.
Yeah. Meetings without an agenda.
Yes, that should be. If memory serves, that was a written rule at Intel at one point. If you send out a meeting invite and it doesn't have an agenda and an objective, you are free to decline.
What was that Elon Musk was doing when he was working at Tesla? He said to, what was that about meetings? It was something like kind of like that. I can't recall it all the way.
You should really have your anecdotes ready.
Well, no,
you're starting to sound like Donna. Do you still have that thing?
No, I know.
No, the doctor cleared it up.
Musk's rules suggest that there should be no frequent meetings unless you're dealing with an urgent matter. There is one little, that's not what I was looking for. That's all right. No, when you said something, it just clicked in my head.
Oh, Edward Chase has a good one. He says, hate.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. He got a couple of hearts on that one. Denise Inglis says mosquitoes.
Oh, that was actually mine. That's what I was going to say. Mosquitoes.
Well, like Steve Lennon says, everything exists for a reason. It's got to be food for somebody.
Yeah. And Fritz Owick Stewart, says computer bugs.
They exist for a reason. They keep us employed.
Yeah. Let's keep them in there, at least just long enough to give us a chance to fix them.
Just not the tough ones.
Yeah.
All right. I got a couple in here. Where'd they go?
You did.
Yeah. Jerry Ann says nuclear bombs. Oh, we'll get into that when I get into the shows that I've been watching in the pass me the remote section.
Those exist for a reason.
Not a good one.
Not a great one. No.
Not a great one. Sean Brockman says hunger, lack of clean water, buildings on the edge of cliffs or right on a shoreline.
Oh, you're right.
And decaf.
Yeah,
he was on a serious track there for a sec.
Yeah,
my sister Martha says greed.
Well, we gotta hold on to that one until the replicators come.
Yeah, I although I said nothing political, please. Craig Glassner put one in, but I'm not gonna read it. So sorry, Craig.
Thanks for your feedback, Craig.
Yeah. If the listeners are interested, they can go to our show notes at chuckchat.com/technorama over and click episode 739. You'll find it. Go to the feedback link and drill in. Right. All right. That's the end of our feedback. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show. Another letter from our listeners. Another doozy from our listeners. Okay. Boom. On this day in history, for April 10th, 2024, this is the 101 day of the year. What a weird coinkydink on this show.
Yeah.
There are 265 days remaining in 2024. It was on this date in 837 that Halley's Comet made its closest approach to Earth at a distance equal to 0.0342 AU. That almost sounds like it was in my backyard, but it's not.
Yeah.
It was 5.1 million kilometers or 3.2 million miles away. So plenty of room.
Your backyard is relative.
Space and time and space is relative.
That's right. So on April 10th, 1606, the Virginia Company of London was established by royal charter by James I of England with the purpose of establishing colonial settlements in North America. How did that work out?
Yeah. And then he said, we need a labor force. I know where we can get some free help.
Yeah.
Also today in 1710, the Statue of Anne, the first law regulating copyright, came into force in Great Britain. Thank you, Anne.
Yay. And it was on this date in 1858 that after the original Big Ben, a 14.5-ton bell for the Palace of Westminster had a crack during testing.
I don't know that.
It was recast into the current 13.76-ton bell by Whitechapel Bell Foundry.
They shaved off a whole 3/4 ton. That's like a pickup truck.
So look, we had a cracked bell and we just put it on display.
Well, I know a cracked bell. He's got a podcast named Bells in the Bat Free.
He's got a cracked bell, all right.
It was 158 years ago today that the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, also known as the ASPCA, was founded in New York City by Henry Bird.
Okay. And it was also on that date in 1872 that the first Arbor Day was celebrated in Nebraska.
That makes absolutely no sense. It's a landlocked state. You can't have an arbor. Badoonch.
Harbor. No? Harbor.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Old Charlie Brown joke that I borrowed.
Right.
That same date in 1912, the RMS Titanic set sail from Southampton, England on her maiden and only voyage.
Woo. Yeah. What happened?
Spoiler alert. Stay tuned in 2 days.
Yeah. All right. So April 10th, 1916, the Professional Golfers Association of America, PGA, was created in New York City.
New York City. It was on this date in 1925 that The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald was first published in New York City by Charles Scribner's Sons.
And it was 85 years ago today that Alcoholics Anonymous, AA's Big Book, was first published.
54 years ago today, Paul McCartney announced he was leaving the Beatles for personal and professional reasons.
All right. And last but not least, well, we got still got birthdays to go through.
Oh, yeah.
Also, on April 10th, 2019, scientists from the Event Horizon Telescope Project announced the first ever image of a black hole, which was located in the center of the M87 galaxy.
Very cool. I almost thought that was the New Horizon Project. I'm like, wait, no, that's the probe that went to Pluto. Event Horizon went somewhere else. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Happy birthday goes out on this date to German mathematician, physicist, and physician Ehrenfried Walter von Chernhaus, born on this date in 1651. I think you got the easy ones this week.
Yeah. John Whitehurst, English geologist and clockmaker, was born on that same date in 1713.
Born April 10th, 1762, Italian physicist and academic Giovanni Aldini.
And Arnold Orville Beckman, the American chemist, inventor, and philanthropist, was born on 124 years ago today.
Oh, I get a good one here. American chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Robert Burns Woodward was born 107 years ago today.
And born April 10th, 1927, American biochemist and genetist. Genesis. Nobel Prize laureate Marshall Warren Nirenberg.
Not Nuremberg, as in the city Nuremberg. In Germany. Egyptian actor and screenwriter Omar Sharif was born this date in 1932.
And also turning 68 today is English chemist and academic Carl V. Robinson.
English computer scientist and academic Carol Gobel was born today, 1961.
And turning 56 today is American actor, producer, and screenwriter Orlando Jones.
I know him best for his role as Steve, the man selling magazines in Office Space.
Right.
You know who I'm talking about if you've seen that movie.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would be willing to buy some magazine subscriptions. Okay, listener birthdays on this day go out. We got two. Danny Harnish on the 14th and Mrs. Technorama, my wife, Donna Tomasi, on the 16th. So happy birthday to her. And that's
the
way.
She was an employee here at Technorama for a little bit.
She was. Employee number five?
Yeah.
That's the way it was on this day in history for April 10th, 2024. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, visit our website. Go over to, it just says pre-show check. What's going on, Mr. Bannerman?
Oh, sorry. I'm busy here. I'm trying to podcast.
Chuckchat.com/birthday. birthday is where you go to get your name on the calendar. Woohoo! Right in time with the music this time. Don't have to kick them out.
Good news, everyone!
Well, we've got lots of news. I don't know if you'd necessarily call it good or not, but this one's not good if you lived in Florida, as Mr. Otero did.
Yeah.
So Alejandro Otero was traveling overseas when he received a panic call from his son back home. Mm-hmm. His son said, "Dad, something just came through the roof. We think it's from space. A piece of space junk, metallic in nature, solid lump of whatever this is, just smaller than a soup can, comes crashing through the roof and embeds itself in the upstairs wall." So Mr. Otero comes home and he says, "Yes, I think this is from space." And he heard news stories about how the ISS was unloading a pallet of batteries and just dumped them into space.
They dropped one.
They dumped the whole pallet. And they said,
"No, I mean, how did..." Yeah.
Well, they said, "Oh, no problem. You know, they'll orbit for about 3 years and then they'll burn up in space." Well, they orbited and they said,
"One made it through."
Some may have come down in the Gulf of Florida and some in Florida. So NASA took this thing and they're analyzing it to see if it's true. And Mr. Otero says, "Can I have it back? Can I have it back? Can I have it back when you're done? Can I have it back when you're done? I don't care if it's, you know, yours or not. Can I have it back when you're done?
I don't care if it's radioactive."
He hasn't heard any response to that. He's doesn't suspect he'll ever get it back. I'm wondering, this is my favorite part at the end. It says, mm-hmm. "I went to the website and filed a claim and had to click on what kind of damage it was." I'm really curious to see what they have in this drop down list, because he said no option matched. I had to click other.
Other. Well, wait a minute.
Do they have some sort of policy that says if we damage your home with our junk?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Did they fix his roof?
That would have been my first question. But I think first they have to prove that it's theirs.
Yeah.
Don't know. Well, interesting story. Yeah, I wouldn't want space junk blasting a hole in my roof.
They had to dump the batteries. Oh, these are the wrong size.
Well, you know, they expired. Someone gets arrested for battery.
Yeah. How long did you say it was supposed to stay in space?
I think they dumped them in 2018 and said, "Yeah, about 3 years or so, they'll be orbiting. Oh, we'll be fine."
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a really slow decline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wow. Speaking of slow decline, scientists have finally made sense of Stephen Hawking's famous black hole formula. That was not a tasteful segue. I apologize. 50 years ago, famed physicist Stephen Hawking wrote down an equation that predicts the black hole has entropy, an attribute typically associated with the disordering jumbling of atoms and molecules in materials. Well, the arguments for black hole entropy were indirect. However, and no one has derived the famous formula, the famous equation from the fundamental definition of entropy, at least not for realistic black holes. What about those unrealistic ones? Wasn't Realistic the brand that Radio Shack used to sell? I had a Realistic radio.
Yeah, that was the brand. The tape deck, all that stuff. Yeah.
CB, yeah. Well, anyway, now one of the team of theorists claims to have done so, although some experts are skeptical. So the report, there's a report in the Physical Review Letters that says, "It's good to have it done," says Don Merolf, a gravitational theorist at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who was not involved in the research. "It shows us how to move forward. That's great." So this almost sounds like what Einstein had done with a few of his theories and equations and whatnot, where nobody could really prove it until they had the instrumentation or the smarts to unravel it and go, "Oh, he was right. The light from that star does bend around when we see a total solar eclipse."
Right.
Mike Robinson says, cool. "Black hole disco. Get on the soul train."
That's right.
We have one other news from space, and that is they figured out the root cause analysis for the jumbled up messages on the Voyager 1 spacecraft.
Yes. I'm going to keep putting that story in here until they resolve it, or one way or another, they're going to resolve it.
They said it came down to one faulty memory chip.
How about that?
And that was impressive that they could diagnose it, you know, being that it's a gazillion miles away.
Yeah.
Takes a long time for anything to come back. They must have done this, you know, by process of elimination somehow over a long period. And the most impressive part about this article was that now that they know what it is, they said based on a recent poke command. Now, if you're an old basic programmer, you remember some of that.
Yeah.
That's where you put something into memory. I don't think they programmed this thing in basic, though, but
change registers.
It's in quotes. Yeah. It returned a memory dump. Engineers concluded that was approximately 3% of corrupted data fit on this one memory chip, opening the possibility for a workaround. So they said NASA engineers have also been working on patching the firmware. This is from 1970s.
I know the things like 50 years old.
Usually you burned a ROM, you stuck it on there, and away you went. I mean, it didn't have a whole lot of writable memory that you could reprogram. This is the phenomenal part for me. I mean, I remember programming burning ROMs, then getting the ones with the little window on them, so you could use the UV light to erase them and reprogram them. Just an EEPROM, and then EEPROMs or E squareds that you could electrically erase. I thought, wow, that was great. Then we started getting things like rewritable, where you could upload firmware patches. When I was working with the engineers at my old company, I remember the company Wind River Systems, who had a real-time operating system that was used on some of the Mars rovers, and they were uploading patches to their operating system. I went, this is so cool! You can fix problems remotely. But to have this back in the 70s, someone was thinking way, way ahead. I'm sure they weren't thinking, we'll need to send a patch in 50 years.
We can't send the Geek Squad out to repair.
Heck of a service call. You got your your $85 travel fee covered.
Good news. You got a career for a while. Bad news. It's going to take you 40, 80,
oh, and as it keeps moving further away.
Yeah. It's going to take you 90 years to go there and do it and come back.
It's a multi-generational service stuff. Yeah, you have to teach your grandkids how to fix it.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, impressive stuff. I mean, A, they diagnosed it. There's a possibility of a workaround. And they can upload firmware. Good on you, NASA. Good on you. All right.
That is pretty amazing.
Quick shout out to the chat room.
We have
Mike Robinson, who's been making some comments, and kudos to you if you're out there and either not making comments or not making or can't make any comments. I don't know if we can do this from X yet, but we'll find out.
I don't know. Does it not sync? Oh, comments. It doesn't look like it comes in from X.
Can't post comments to some destinations. We can't post comments, but.
Oh, that's true.
Whether or not it comes in. I don't know. We'd love to try it out. Find out, and while we give a shout out to the patrons, we're down to this part of the show already.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, we're cruising. Well, thank you very much to our patrons. These are the people that have contributed. You know, some people like to have their reviews on Apple Podcasts or whatever. We'll take the cash.
Cash.
You can support us by going to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Says so on the screen if you're watching. If you're listening, it's still patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Nothing changed in the last 15 seconds. At least we hope not. People like Alexis Durant, what are you adding that deleting that is nothing. Moving my I'm screen sorry. Up? I can't I read the table of stuff.
I forgot you're looking at it too, and I'm cleaning up some of the stuff.
Not during the show.
Oh.
You literally scrolled the first row of names off the screen.
You should know these people by now.
I should.
Yeah.
But you know what? I write them down so my brain has power to do other things. Thank you, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstead, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown. Maybe if I put them to music, I could get this better. It's Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris Martinez, Chris MC, Dandy. We tried this once before. It didn't work at all. No, and it still doesn't. Dandy Man Coyer. And really ripped if somebody throws a name in your name here. Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis. Gary Lindros, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorge Schrauen, your name here. That's like five gold rings. Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Brad Miller. Thank you, Mike Wills. and Saturday Morning Media, and Steve Wesche, and Steve Cody, Steve Therian, Steve Webb, Steve London, and Tim Cook. You all rock, man. You get an extra show. You get an extra episode where Craig and I kick back, drink the virtual scotch, and smoke the virtual cigars. If you want to imagine us doing that, that's fine. But one of us might be doing that. The other's not. We'll leave that to you.
Right.
And we also have some other goodies during the year. So thank you very much. Those people make this show happen. Okay, you can take the banner down now.
You're trying to navigate back to it.
We need to put that in the show notes. It's like the script I'm doing for the keynote. Then move over here. So-and-so gets off stage.
Right. Stage left, stage right.
Okay, trick question for you.
Okay.
As you look at the stage in the audience,
yep,
is stage left to your left or to your right?
It's to your left.
No, it's not.
No.
It's as you're standing on stage. It's to the actor's left. So when the director says,
"That's what I said,"
stage left. No, I said you are in the audience looking at the stage.
Audience. Oh.
Once again, he fails the snake's live birth test.
You know what?
You got to listen, Craig. You got to listen.
I did. Hey, in all fairness,
he's still sore.
There were people in the
audience. 2 months later, he's still sore.
Those people in the audience that were like, man, you won because I answered the question correctly. Oh, well.
Moving along. What section are we on now?
Media Corner.
Media Corner. Let's play that Media Corner music.
Music?
Welcome to Blog.
Taken from an old.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here. Listen. In the Media Corner.
Blockbuster Video will live on for this clip.
Yeah, that's what the media center guy sounded like 18, 19 years ago.
He sounds so much younger then, didn't he?
Yeah. So were you able to see these pictures?
I did. I was able to pull them up on my phone. These are pretty fun. The title of this article is 35 fictional locations you can visit right here in the real world. That's some of them are actually entertaining. You know, they've got the tailor shop from the Kingsman, and surprise, it's an actual tailor shop.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
A bunch of the scenes from Elf were from the Riverview Hospital in British Columbia. It's an abandoned mental institution. Camp Crystal Lake, you know, the Friday the 13th films, at least the early ones.
That's a great place to go running around in the woods naked.
With a hockey mask, sure.
No, he was chasing naked teenagers and stuff.
Well, I'll take the hockey mask and you can run around naked.
Yeah.
I think we just gave our listeners an image. Do not generate AI art for that, please.
Do not suggest it, Chuck. Great. Thanks.
What a wonderful world we live in today. I can have this random, disgusting vision and someone will put it to
right. I know.
All right. The crate scenes, you know, the big white planet.
That was visually, that was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah. That's actually the world's largest salt flat called Salar de Uyuni. And it stretches 4,086 square miles in Bolivia. Although I doubt if you start digging, it will turn red.
Yeah, that was the cool part. How everything was white until they started walking on it or something. It would just turn
blood.
Red.
It oxidizes. Yeah. Right. Any others these stand out in your mind?
I'm trying to remember all of them. Oh, Jurassic World. That was the Six Flags that. That was destroyed in Katrina, I think it was.
Yeah. There was a special I covered that on this show called Closed for the Season or Closed Closed for Hurricane.
There's some YouTube videos also where some people went.
How do you film a feature film like that when you've got park stuff in there? You know, there's a roller coaster. It's not like the T-Rex is going to run under the roller coaster, is it?
Maybe. I don't know. No, but I know I watched some after it was probably about a year after Katrina. There were some people that went there and I remember seeing some abandoned, you know, footage kind of stuff where they were, you know, going around the park looking at it or filming it, recording it. Close Encounters, of course, you know, that's Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Yep.
Which I kind of want to go see that in person at some point.
I like the fact that the final scenes from Escape from New York were filmed in L.A. Surprise!
That's right. I
do like the... I also
didn't know the Truman Show was an actual place. Because he was in that fictional dome thing where they were filming his show. But it was actually filmed in Seaside, Florida.
What was the one? I can't find it in here because the images aren't coming up on this computer. But the Teletubbies one says it was filmed in this basically lady's backyard until she got sick of people coming on her property to take pictures. Then she turned into a pond.
Wow. That's one way to fix it.
I inverted their house and flooded it.
Yeah. Right.
Didn't realize that the hotel where The Graduate, remember the old film with Dustin Hoffman?
Right.
That was filmed in the Ambassador Hotel, same place that Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. I did not see that part.
The other one that I thought was kind of cool was the first Anakin movie?
The first one?
Force Awakens. Was it Force Awakens? No, where they filmed
Phantom Menace?
It was Phantom Menace. Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. They filmed that or parts of it in the same location where the Germans surrendered in Italy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So some of these have some real great historic context.
Yeah. Absolutely. There was, of course, Ghostbusters. Everybody knows about the firehouse. And
it was chopped in half.
Yeah, you can actually go see it in New York. When I went to New York, I walked around Central Park, and I went to the area where the apartment building, where at the final part of the movie.
Yep.
I saw that. I got a picture of that. That was pretty cool. But yeah, there's a bunch of them on here.
And if you really want, you can stay in Luke Skywalker's home on Tatooine. Now, yeah. We all probably know that a lot of the sand scenes were filmed in Tunisia, as was the scene from this. It's a hotel. The Lars homestead is actually the Hotel City Driss in Matmata, Tunisia. Because I want to stay there. Well, bring along a new power of motivator.
Yeah, and some blue milk.
Some blue milk, and have fun at Tashi Station on the weekends.
That's right.
All right, cool. And also, in movie theme, Disney's animatronics, they're really stepping up their games.
Yes. You watch a couple of these videos, those
they're
animated
so
characters.
Fluid.
These are characters that were animated, you know, originally, and they're brought to life, and their movements look awesome.
They're as fluid as dancers, in my opinion. If the mouth wasn't, you know, looking so mechanical, you go, I swear there's somebody in there.
Yeah, there were, you know, when we went to Disney, it feels like eons ago, we went there and we saw the Hall of Presidents or, you know, something like that, and they all looked a little jerky. Like,
right.
Maybe
you can
maybe
tell there
an
was
upgrade,
mechanic.
Maybe an upgrade from Chuck E. Cheese, but they still looked a little jerky. You know, these do not. These are, like you said, they're fluid. Their joints look like they really work like they're supposed to, and it's amazing to see.
They've got some of the characters from Tiana's Bayou Adventure. They've got the amazing shaman from Na'vi, from Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, a little further down in the article, they have a video on droids in training.
Now, I saw this other day outside of this article, but these little droids, they look like they could have been in one of the films, and they're bipedal, and they just walk around, and they're interacting with, it looks like they're interacting with
the people or each other.
Yeah, with the environment a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe they are autonomous. I don't think anybody's behind the scenes controlling them remotely.
I thought there was a, I thought I saw somebody with a remote. Yeah, there's a guy right there in their back. He's just kind of walking around and he's got it's brown. So it kind of blends into his outfit.
Oh, okay.
The controller, but yeah, they look, I think he's just telling it which direction to go. And they kind of do their own little thing.
Very, they emote well. That's it. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you to go check that out on our show notes in the media corner.
Yeah.
All right. On to Pass Me the Remote. Let's talk about a little bit about what we've been watching lately. Woohoo! All right. I've got a few in here. Yes, you convinced me to start watching Star Crash, but I did not watch it the original way. I did go back to MST3K during the Gauntlet, I think it was, and
right,
much more entertaining. I'll tell you, it's much more. I'm about three quarters of the way through. I cannot handle more than about 30 minutes at a time on this thing.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm taking
okay.
it
yeah,
in
yeah.
small it's, doses so that I don't poison my brain entirely.
It was terrible.
It's a stinker.
Yeah.
But, you know, MST always makes it a little more fun. How I watched yeah. this before and don't remember it, I must have just mentally blocked it out like a trauma.
I don't know. I've never heard about it until recently, you know, until yeah. It started showing up. And I've seen spoofs like the Hardware Wars, things like that, you know, which is a kind of a famous spoof on Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you know, but this, I don't know how it should have been in my orbit somewhere, and I don't know why it wasn't.
No pun intended.
Huh?
All right. In your orbit somewhere? This yeah. is a space movie?
I know. Oh, I got it. Sorry, I'm a little slow today.
Yeah, some of the editing on it is just terrible. Like, her outfit changes right in the middle of a scene. You know, they cut
right.
from one camera angle to the other. Like, where did that collar come from?
That's what I was talking about. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, I mean, it's really, really bizarre.
She had the stripes on pieces as part of her outfit. And then like a few moments later, I'm like, wait, you see her bare midriff now. What happened? You know, those were.
Although I did like MST when you know, she was wearing the clear space baggy outfit and the troglodytes yeah. have her hanging upside down.
Right.
they were making. Makes your own gravy. You know,
just, I may have to go watch.
Oh yeah,
go through it again with MST3K.
All right, what have you got?
I didn't really watch a whole lot. I've been super busy at work, so I didn't really want to do much after I was done. So I didn't watch a whole lot, but I started watching Resident Alien. Evil.
Yeah,
Resident Alien. It popped up on Netflix. I thought it was on YouTube. It may have been Hulu. I thought it was on Hulu originally, but, Resident Alien is, Alan Tudyk. He's an alien that wasn't supposed to land on Earth, but he did. And so he kind of was trying to survive by blending in, which is hilarious. Some of his thought process, you hear him go over, you think he's making progress by starting to care about people, but then you hear his inner dialogue and it's like, that's not, no, he's not. It's totally not. He's like, you know, plotting to kill somebody or something. It's hilarious. It's like a dark comedy a little bit. I'm really enjoying it. So I'm
right,
about three episodes in.
Okay. We are a couple episodes into Gentleman in Moscow on Paramount Plus.
Yes,
highly rated, and I'm enjoying it. They're still introducing characters. It is one of these stories that tells the story of the past.
It's even McGregor, isn't it, by the way?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And they tell the story of the past through flashbacks, so you get these little snippets of his sister and, you know, what's going on there, but you still don't have the full context, right. Which is going to explain a lot. So the basic premise of the story is it's right after the Bolshevik Revolution. The rich people have either been killed or sequestered, shall we say. He's one of the people that was locked up in a hotel. He cannot leave or he will be shot. Because the only reason he's still alive, he was a former count. And, I guess he still is. You can't really take his title away. But he wrote a poem a few years earlier that inspired the revolution. They said, well, thank you, but you're still a rich SOB. So in you go. Oh, and we've taken all your money. and you don't get to live in this lavish suite that you used to be in. You get the cold, freezing attic with a, you know, wire bed that squeaks and whatnot. So, but he still has his tux, and he still comes down to dinner, so his food and everything is paid for somehow. But we're starting to make some friendships and relationships through the hotel. Very interesting storyline.
All right. Yeah, I saw the little trailer for it, and it looked interesting. So let me know how it goes.
He's kind of got that Edgar Allan Poe haircut and mustache thing going on. That's what I keep thinking he looks like.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I was going to point out a YouTube channel, which I like. This guy, Lon Zibin, he reviews tech, and he does a good job with it. It has almost like that. You remember some of the reviews and stuff like on Tech TV?
Yeah.
It has that kind of feel about it a little bit. He's a good presenter, very knowledgeable. You can see all those old, he's got old Apple stuff on his shelf and behind him. He's also, he's a very smart guy. He got his ham radio license, and he was talking about that one point. But one thing I thought was really interesting was he's been following along with some of the changes in over the air broadcast that are preventing people from being able to just record because they're trying to encrypt this stuff, which it's public broadcasting. It shouldn't be encrypted. And so he was kind of spearheading a whole thing with the FCC and signatures and, but to listen to him talk about it is very knowledgeable about all this stuff. So, anyway, I really like Lon, and I would, highly recommend anybody go there. If you want to look, you know, see some tech reviews. When I got my NAS over here, he had reviewed one a while back, and he was walking through the whole thing. So I kind of watched him go through, and I was like, "Oh, okay. I didn't know you could do that. Didn't know you could do that," and I learned a few things. So
neat.
Yeah.
All right. One other one that I've been watching on Netflix is called Turning Point: The Bomb and the Cold War. And of course, they started like back. I think it was the Russian Revolution and Leninism and Marxism and all that good stuff that set us on a path to where we are today. And they keep tying it back to the Ukrainian war, the war that's going on in Ukraine right now. And you can see all these threads. Boy, if somebody had just, you know, gone a little different direction, or if this guy had become leader, that, you know, we'd be in a totally different course. But they take you through Stalin and obviously the atomic bomb, because it's in the name. And the escalation of that and the whole arms escalation in the 60s and 70s. It's really a fascinating show. And you get these little tidbits going, oh, yeah, that's who planted the seeds for this that came later. There were a couple of aha moments going, oh, that's why this guy is like that. Okay. That was a bit of a mistake.
Right.
We live with now, and we will be living with for decades. So it's fascinating to see where we are, and you can't help but try and you know, forecast where some of these things will be going in the future. I'm not done with the show yet. I believe I just got up to the fall of the Soviet Union. So around 89, 90, that time frame. Which is going to,
and there was much rejoicing.
That's going, yeah. That's going to bring Putin to the stage, and then we really start having some fun. So yeah, that's Turning Point: The Bomb and the Cold War in Netflix. So more history for me.
All right.
Also watched a couple on YouTube real quick. There's one called "Why Is This Number Everywhere?" And it was a statistical probability study where they would walk up to people on the street and say, "Pick a number between 1 and 100," and a lot. Overwhelming number of people said 37.
Really?
Yeah. It was bizarre. And then they went into a bunch of reasons why people picked this. And if they had said, okay, now pick a, you know, it's a fascinating study, both from a psychological standpoint and a statistical standpoint. So why is this number everywhere? And another one is called "The Most Important Day in Tornado Science History," April 3rd, 1974. That's when we had a mega outbreak in the United States from like Louisiana up through Ohio, just dozens and dozens of these. And it was real turning point in that, are you familiar with the EF scale, the F scale of tornadoes, like an F5, F1, F2?
Yeah.
The F is for Fujita. Well, now they have the enhanced Fujita scale, which is a little more descriptive, but this is how he got his scale. He was saying, look, if we analyze the path and determine the wind speed, we can do this, and this. And everybody's going, nah, no, that's not how it works. And you got to remember, radar technology wasn't all that back in the early 70s. But this was really interesting from a standpoint of brought him to the forefront and proved a lot of his theories, because he had a lot of data to work with. And in fact, it was a bit not morbid or cold, but as soon as a tornado would rip through one of these towns, he was on the scene asking people, because the first thing the town wants to do is clean up. He's like, no, this is like evidence. I need scientific data.
Right.
So he would ask the witnesses, what did you see? Was the tree bent over or did it?
There was a witch on a broomstick.
Right. And then a house fell on this other old lady, and someone stole her shoes. It was a bad day. So the most important day in tornado science history. Good stuff. I love exploring this. I do have some other things in the Geek Library, including two more videos from Kari, the lovely young woman in the UK who's doing stuff with old computers.
Right.
She fixed a printed circuit board on one of her Sega games. The ROM was not working, and she opened it up and went, oh, man, this PCB's all busted. The reason I mentioned that one is because I put a comment in there. I said, hey, if you want to take it to the next level, maybe you want to make your own PCB. And someone responded back, maybe there's already the files out there that you can download and then just fabricate a new one. And somebody said, there's probably. So it was an interesting thread. Went, cool. So
yeah,
she's getting a lot of positive feedback on her channel. She's only made like four or five videos, but
This is the same girl we talked about last week?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
There's another one, Six Theories of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Nothing real new in that video. I just found it surprising that nearly 50 years later, we're still talking about this. And we still don't know what actually sunk it. So that was fun. Some Arduino projects. It's History is another one of my favorite channels on YouTube. Ryan Sokash goes through and talks about abandoned subways or what's on the rooftop of New York's most famous skyscrapers.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun there.
Oh, I was going to say, I was going to go back on that girl's her channel and comment that we had, talked about her video on a podcast.
That's a great idea. Shameless self-promotion. Hey, you're getting popular, so we talked about you.
Well, I got to go get another subscriber. get her to subscribe.
All right. Or if one of our listeners wants to do that too. I heard this on Technorama. That speaks louder than if we did it. So we'd appreciate that greatly.
Yes.
Okay, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you all very much. We just have one more thought to leave you with, and that's our question of the week for next week. What seems to be overpriced, but it's really 100% worth it?
Marriage.
What's the price? How much does it
cost? There is no price.
Well, it costs us to get
it's priceless the in both
wedding
in both
hall
respects.
And the reception, but.
Yeah, get it? It's priceless in both respects.
Okay. What's overpriced? Not priceless. What's overpriced?
Cheese.
Most food these days?
Yeah, please do not say Technorama.
Cheese. Maybe someone was taking his picture and he typed cheese.
Yeah.
Kind of like the castle. We were dying. Why would he scratch into the wall? No. Back of the throat.
Yeah.
Sorry, Monty Python reference. Can't do without it. Got to have one of those every day.
Right.
It's like an apple a day. Well, this is a Python reference a day, which means it's time for the end of the show. So thank you, Craig, for all the research and the articles. Thank you, listener or viewer, for joining us. And if you want to get in touch with us, we forgot to play Crazy Joe's voicemail. We'll get it next time.
Oh, all right.
He had an answer to one of the questions of the week about bad movies.
You're right. I forgot to put that in there.
I listened to it today and I went, we got to get that in the show notes. Joe, we will get your voicemail in there.
Hey, sorry, we both failed you.
Yes, we did. But We'll try. If you leave a listener, if you leave us a voicemail, 707, click Craig Banner.
I know, I'm trying to pull it up. 707-530-2428.
707-530-CHAT. You can possibly get on the show. We have millions of these coming in every day. We have to siphon through the best of the one. Till next time, give us a binary high five.
101.